Welcome to The Property Wizard. If you are brand new to the real estate investment world or have limited experience, you've come to the right place. Freddie Crouch has over 35 years of real estate investing experience. He's seen it all, and he's ready to share it with you. This podcast takes an inside look at investing in real estate, what to look for, and most of all, how to move forward. Please welcome the property wizard, Freddie.
Welcome back, listeners. A big thank you to the team at Carl Speaks, headed up by no other than Mr. Podcast himself, Carl Richards. We would especially like to acknowledge and thank our producer, Kieran Doherty. Without him, we just wouldn't sound as good as we like to think we do. And supporting this awesome duo are Nathan Simon, who created the original sound score, and Caroline Nicolai, who every episode supplies us with new cover artwork. Thank you, everyone, for a wonderful effort. Go team! So, how about a short recap from our previous podcast when we talked to Jeremy Taylor and Matt Fagan from Cambion about building surveys or property condition reports? I think they prefer them being called. What did you think about that, Bernie?
It's a useful aspect to know if you're a property owner. A couple of fronts. One, if you're budgeting out, how much money should I set aside for repairs for time? And of course, obviously, if you're going to sell the property, now you have, it's not a warranty, but it gives you a good sense of, you know, whoever's buying it gives them a good sense of what's going to cost to run and maintain the property. So it serves a multiple purposes.
Yeah. And the big takeaway from that I found was, you know, for those of our listeners that have purchased or are contemplating buying commercial investment property or just investment property to begin with, they should be very familiar with both the term and why the financial institution is asking for that report. And you really have to look at the bright side because there's a silver lining in every ask. In this particular case, it really assists you in budgeting. It assists you with cash flow, knowing how much life is left in your roofing system, how much life is left in your HVAC system if the building is so equipped. And it allows you to budget and forecast for future expenditures. So if you haven't listened to that particular podcast, listeners, please do. Lots of useful information.
Excellent. Dun, 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 dun.
You've got mail. Anything in the mailbag today, Bernie?
Fred? Yes. Mike from Edmonton writes, he's searching for property and he's come across several previously used cannabis facilities that seem to be selling for far less than what was spent building them. Do you have any thoughts on what these buildings could be used for?
Yes. Cannabis facilities. Barely a week goes by where someone isn't asking about a cannabis facility, or I don't come across one and I'm asked to go take over the actual property management of one. Cannabis facilities that have outlived their usefulness as cannabis facilities are excellent candidates for use as community gardens or larger scale vegetable grow operations. The spaces are usually sterile, have excellent ventilation and air circulatory characteristics, and usually they have some sort of built-in water dispersion system, ideal for the growing of produce. Now, that being said, not that our intention here on the Property Wizard is to provide you with horticultural advice, but please keep in mind that soils suitable for the growing of cannabis are not necessarily suitable for the growing of vegetables.
So, another letter here from Samantha from Sudbury. She submitted an offer on a building and asked the seller for an environmental site assessment because her mortgage broker has told her that it'll be a requirement. What should I do if the seller doesn't want to pay for one?
Now, this happens all the time. There are really two points of view when it comes to dealing with this question. A buyer would argue that the seller should pay because it's their property. However, a seller would suggest that no, they have no need for an ESA, an environmental site assessment, and that it's the buyer that requires it in order to satisfy their financing condition. The who pays argument can get even more complicated if it's discovered that the property will require a phase two environmental site assessment. And, you know, some of our listeners will remember back that a phase two can cost anywhere from $8,000, $9,000, $10,000, $12,000, all the way up to $30,000 or $40,000. There really isn't a right or wrong answer. Who pays for an ESA is completely negotiable between the parties.
Excellent. So if you have any questions for Fred, send your emails to info@gentryres.com. That's info@gentryres.com. And of course, if there are no problems,
there are no opportunities.
From the current events desk of the Property Wizard, it's news of the week.
So, in the news this week, our Canadian government is making all sorts of noise trying to address the lack of affordable housing issue. I'm reading the headline by Najoud Al-Maliz, and I apologize, Najoud, if I haven't pronounced your name correctly. He wrote for the Canadian Press, "Feds unlock another $20 billion for low-cost rental construction financing." So let me just paraphrase a little of what's in this article. The federal government is unlocking another $20 billion in low-cost financing for the construction of rental housing across Canada. The Canadian Mortgage Bonds Program, which raises funds for residential mortgage financing, had an annual limit of $40 billion previously. That has now been increased to $60 billion. With the additional funds aimed at increasing rental construction specifically. Now, this includes construction for new apartment buildings, student housing, and senior residences. The federal government says the new funding will boost rental construction by some 30,000 units annually. The program allows developers to access loans from financial institutions for multi-unit rental projects at an interest rate that is 1 or 2 percentage points lower than a conventional mortgage. He finishes up by saying the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, or CMHC as we like to call it, estimates that the country needs to build an additional 3.5 million homes on top of the current pace of building by 2030 to restore affordability. So the government obviously believes there's a connection, and there is, between lack of affordable housing and affordability. It's classic supply and demand. Under the same program, I'm now going to read to you a portion of an article written by Dylan Robertson, again with the Canadian Press. That's entitled Trudeau. And for our US listeners, when you're using the term Trudeau, we're referring to Prime Minister Trudeau, announces first deal under $4 billion housing fund. Now, this is a separate fund. So, let me go on to read the article for you. More than 2,000 new housing units will be built in London, Ontario. For those who don't know where London, Ontario is, it's just west of Toronto, where everybody knows where it is. Again, more than 2,000 new housing units will be built in London, Ontario over the next 3 years, as the city became the first in the country to sign a deal under the new National Housing Accelerator Fund. The $4 billion accelerator program was first announced in the 2022 federal budget, but applications weren't accepted until July, which is so typical, right, Bernie, living in a bureaucratic town. Things always take much longer than what you would think. Trudeau said London, Ontario was the fastest to respond to the call for ambitious plans that eliminate municipal barriers to getting homes built more quickly. Now, that includes, for example, zoning rules that limit the kind of homes that can be built in specific areas. Trudeau referred to London's proposal as absolutely visionary. It allows for building high-density housing developments without the need for rezoning and allows 4 units to be built on a single property, even in low-density neighborhoods. Now, that touches on a lot of points we've discussed here on the Property Wizard, a lot of different incentives that just aren't unique to Canada, but across North America. So we're going to see what happens there. I think they're headed in the right direction, but is it a case of too little, too late? Only time is going to tell. But a little bit of encouraging reaction, and I'm just going to read a very, very brief article written by Ben Cousins from the BNN Bloomberg Network. Again, the headline reads, "Developer credits the GST rebate for 5 $100,000 rental unit plan. GST or HST is a tax that's imposed on all new housing and developments in this country. So let me carry on. Earlier this month, Ottawa announced it would remove the GST from new rental builds as part of its plan to boost the housing supply in Canada and address housing prices. There again is that reference towards lack of affordable housing and housing prices. Developers have largely applauded the move as it represents about a 10% savings on new projects. A Toronto developer is crediting the federal government's plan to remove the GST from new rental buildings for its plan to bring 5,000 new housing units across the country. Dream Unlimited Corp., which is a well-known developer, announced plans to bring housing projects to urban centers in Ottawa, Saskatoon, Calgary, and Toronto, with an amount totaling and approaching 5,000 units. So some good news for a change. I think we're taking some good positive steps there, Bernie. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding. It's still woefully inadequate, even with these numbers and the amount of money being thrown at it. It isn't enough to completely resolve the issue. And quite frankly, I think it's about time. Because remember that part of this problem is being created by Canada's very, very literally liberal immigration policy. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of new immigrants that, of course, are fully welcome, but we don't have any place to put them. So this, in part, is going to address part of that issue. What do you think about those apples, Bernie?
I think the tax break is an immediate, you know, it's not a long term, it's instant on. I think the other strategies might take a ramp up period of time for that cascade through. And I know that every time I look around where we live in this city, someone has got a building going up. There's a condo going up, you know, for high density. There seems to be no shortage. And usually they're in the news because they're blocking the sun or, you know, other such things.
Some of these conditions that are imposed on municipalities before receiving these federal funds are things that, you know, they're meant to fight NIMBYism, right? Not in my backyard-ism. And, you know, it's up to the municipalities to stand up to that type of political pressure in order to receive funding. But again, it goes right back onto the shoulders of the municipal councillors. So let's see what happens. Welcome back, listeners. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to introduce to you Alex Points Wright, who is a director of sales for Evolta Electric, Ottawa's low-carbon electrical contractor with expertise in sustainability. Alex was educated in England, and you'll be able to recognize that with his accent, and gained his BSc in mechanical design and manufacturing from the University of Plymouth. He then spent 20 years working for various global manufacturing companies, both in Europe and in North America, as general manager and North American business development manager. Alex resides just outside of Ottawa and lives with his wife and 8-year-old daughter on the banks of the mighty Ottawa River. That's Alex's words, not mine. Alex has an interest in the outdoors, boats, motorcycles, and cooking. Not that we're knocking the Ottawa River, everybody. Anyways, welcome to the show, Alex. Great to have you on.
Great. Thank you. Delighted to be here.
So let's get right to it. I think you're really going to find this show interesting. And it really affects all of you because there's a lot of real great cost-saving tips and guidelines here that you want to listen to. So, Alex, what are the most common improvements a property owner can undertake to improve the electrical efficiencies of his or her building? You must be asked that a lot.
We're asked that a great many times, and it's the same for commercial buildings as it is for residential. And the big one, as you probably already know, is LED lighting. We're working on a project right now where we're swapping out 8,500 lights for LED lighting, and the savings for the end user are significant. The break-even point is something like year 3, and then going forward after that, saving hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. So LED lighting is a big one. Smart devices or timers to reduce time on lighting, having things automated so they turn on and off at the correct time, is another big one.
So if I'm switching from incandescent to LED, what percentage of energy savings can be considered to be had or going from fluorescent to LED? Is there a benefit?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, Bernie. And say, for example, the price of a kilowatt hour is, say, 10 cents of electricity. If we have a 100 watt incandescent light turned on for 10 hours, that's going to cost us 10 cents to run it. Now, if we change that for, say, a 26 watt compact fluorescent light and have that turned on for 10 hours, that's going to cost us 2.6 cents as opposed to 10 cents. That's a 74% saving. But then if we go to a 14 watt LED light, that's going to be even more economical and it's going to cost us less than 1 cent and it's 86% cheaper. So if you think you multiply all those savings by multiple lights, it doesn't take very long for these savings to be significant, particularly, you know, in multi-unit residential buildings, hospitals, schools. The savings are huge, which is why a lot of what we're doing now, what the projects we're working on, is LED lighting, because people are understanding that the savings are significant.
So in order of efficiency, what top five improvements would bring the quickest return on the investment if you're a property owner and looking at a refit?
Again, another really, really good question. I think almost certainly all the elements, or the majority of the elements, are found in the building envelope. And that's the part of the building that separates the indoors from the outdoors. So I'd say a big one is insulation in the walls and in the roof, stopping the hot air escaping in the winter and keeping the air conditioning in the summertime. Another big one is windows and doors and gaps between windows and doors. Plugging those gaps or replacing those windows and replacing those doors can result in some significant savings, you know, stop the drafts coming in and out. And the other elements are mechanical systems, you know, the heating and cooling systems, and introducing heat pumps that use electricity rather than burning fossil fuels. That's another big one. And then I'd say the final one is perhaps the introduction of solar panels to generate your own electricity. But yeah, insulation in the building envelope is definitely where it starts.
Wonderful. Thank you for that.
If I'm making a electrical improvement in my house or in my workplace, do I need a permit? Let's say if I'm putting an outlet in versus I'm switching out the breaker box to, or bringing in, upgrading the service. That, you know, let's say I'm 100 amp service and I need to go to 500 amp because I'm adding hardware. Do I need permits for that?
The short answer is, you need a permit for everything. Certainly on commercial projects, I mentioned earlier about the 8,500 light bulbs we're working on. We've got a permit to change 8,500 light fixtures. In the home, if you're just changing a switch and putting a new switch in, perhaps you don't need a permit for that. But if you're introducing an additional switch or an additional outlet, then I would say you definitely need a permit for that. That's what the Electrical Safety Authority would say. They'd say if you're touching anything electrical, you need a permit for it.
And that is good, sage, and safe advice, listeners, regardless of where you live. So, Alex, what kind of federal or provincial incentives are there for a property owner to help them undertake electrical improvements and improve efficiencies?
Well, there's the Canada Greener Homes Grant, and it's an interesting grant because they can give you up to $5,000 for your initiative and even offer you an interest-free loan of up to $40,000. Ultimately, the Canada Greener Homes Grant wants to help Canadians live more efficiently, and the Greener Homes Initiative will help homeowners save money, create new jobs across Canada for energy advisors, and ultimately fight the climate change. What I would suggest is when you participate in this home energy grant, you apply online, you select the service organization near you. These guys are approved to carry out the energy evaluations. They'll pre-retrofit evaluation of your home. So they'll come to your house, they'll do all these tests, they'll test the windows, the doors, etc. And then you'll receive an information sheet with the energy efficiency rating of your home and also the renovation upgrade report, which will take you through the elements that need to be improved. And then you decide on which renovations you want to have done. And the advisor can help you prioritize those so that you get the biggest bang for your buck. But almost certainly, as we said earlier, it always really begins with insulation, windows, and doors.
Yeah, like we started off earlier when you were explaining the top five, yeah, you know, improvements you can do. And again, those top five are not just for your own residential home. They're also applicable you know, when you're talking about any type of an investment property, whether it's a single family or whether it's a multi-unit, these things don't change. What Alex is telling us, stick with the top five. You're not going to go wrong.
So talk to us about energy storage solutions. What's meant by energy storage? And, you know, I've heard some things talked about like battery walls, but, you know, what else is out there?
Energy storage is essentially a big battery that you would have in your house, and you can use it for a number of things. You can use it to draw off-peak electricity at nighttime, and then use that cheaper electricity in the on-peak hours, so you can make savings that way. You can use those energy storage solutions for powering your home in a power outage. You could also use those energy storage, the big batteries, to store solar energy as well that you generate from your rooftop. So energy storage refers to the use of battery systems, essentially. And one of the things that we're hearing about from these manufacturers is something called bi-directional charging. And with the introduction of electric vehicles, soon we'll all be driving around big batteries on four wheels. And it's about using the battery in the car to potentially power your home in a power outage, or to power your home and then take the pressure off the grid when more and more electric vehicles are being charged at nighttime. So energy storage is something that we're going to be hearing a lot more about in the coming years, I'm sure of it.
Do you install a large number of EV charging units in commercial or residential buildings, Alex?
We do both. We started the business with the vision of providing solutions for EV owners. Initially, when we started the business, people would go and buy an electric vehicle from the dealerships, but they wouldn't get a great deal of support in terms of charging their car afterwards. So the buying experience often fell flat on its face. So that was one of the core things that we were addressing. And as the business has grown, we're doing both residential and commercial applications. And we've done a number of prestigious car dealerships in the Ottawa area. We work directly with their customers, and we've been doing shopping centers, strip malls, all kinds of scenarios, because the EV space obviously is growing, and people sometimes they need to charge when they're not at home as well. We're doing it all over the place, workplaces, hospitals, schools, yeah, everywhere.
Great. Good to know.
When you're installing this type of hardware, like you mentioned, like the home, et cetera, but when you're talking about a shopping mall or other spaces where public can come in and tap in, obviously the electricity is not free. How do you balance out, you know, hi, I'm plugging in. How do I pay for my electricity? How do I pay for the hardware? Because I know that if you have one of those rapid chargers, it's not like a couple hundred dollars. That's like, you know, what, a 50K investment?
Oh, yes. Yeah. For the level three chargers.
Yeah. And so how does a business recoup the cost? And like, what type of lifespan do you expect the EV station to be running?
Well, in terms of recouping the cost, there's a number of network providers that essentially run these charging solutions, if you like, and they bill them at whatever rate they want to charge the customer. They manage the software so that, you know, only people approved to charge at that particular station can charge. So they're managed sort of basically on the internet in terms of how they want to charge them up.
So let's say you're an apartment building owner.
Yeah.
And let's say you're trying to take the green route and you decide on capital expenditures of, you know, 100K to install, I don't know, maybe I'm exaggerating, I'm just throwing numbers out there. But how do you recoup the cost involved in providing that service to your tenants?
There's a number of ways in which you can do it. Basically, what you could do is provide a basic electrical vehicle charging framework, right? So what that would mean is essentially the condo would provide what would be a spine going through the parking garage, for example, with all the service upgrades that needed to occur. And then the residents then potentially would say, just an average number, would potentially pay, say, $6,500 each to have their parking spot capable of charging an electric vehicle. The benefit of doing that is that the price for each resident of the condo would be the same. and you're not having somebody saying, my parking spot's closer to the electrical panel, I should be paying less. So by doing that, the residents are paying the same amount of money. The condo building can then work with a network provider, of which there's several that we work with. And we'd work with a condo in terms of determining the price they wanted to charge. You could provide potentially a monthly bill, or you could charge for the amount of electricity used. But you can change that price at the push of a button whenever you wanted to as the building owner. If you need to put your prices up, the electricity's gone up, you just put your prices up.
So EV systems and propulsion systems, and you hear about batteries, and you know, once a storage system has lost its ability to retain its power or retain the charges, I should say. We're hearing different horror stories, and you know, and then and of course, if power catches fire, you just gotta let that puppy burn out, which is unfortunate. Is there anything to help address that? Is there a servicing program that helps address, you know, battery failure? Can you recycle the batteries?
The technology around batteries is changing all the time. One of the big things was the range anxiety that people got regarding batteries. And you've seen how the technology has improved, and we're seeing 500-600 kilometers range on these batteries. And yes, they can deteriorate, and they do deteriorate, and the performance does decrease, but they can be reconditioned. And they can be re-sort of manufactured to optimum performance. I was reading an article the other day by a company in the US that is receiving between 50 and 100 batteries a day to recondition. And they are refurbishing between 80 and 90% of those batteries. And the ones that can't be refurbished, that really are end of life, they are recycling them. And we're seeing businesses pop up all the time that are offering to refurb and recycle batteries. And again, this is going to be another spin-off. It's going to be big business as we see the EVs increase on, you know, North America's roads.
Well, it sounds like a really great business opportunity.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll continue this podcast after the recording stops. Alex, thank you for being our guest today. This has been really informative. You've been wonderful. I'm sure our listeners will have all sorts of questions for you. What's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Alex, A-L-E-X, at Evolta, E-V-O-L-T-A, electric.com. And I'd be happy to answer any listeners' questions or anything they want to discuss.
Fantastic. And listeners, all Alex's contact information will be on the podcast notes. So wonderful.
It's time for the Property Wizard's Word of the Day.
So, as become a tradition here on the Property Wizard, we don't let our guests off quite so scot-free. We have one further task for you. Would you be so kind as to explain to our listeners during our Word of the Day program, it's really a phrase, a two-word request. Could you explain to our listeners what is meant by net zero?
Let's look at it from a home. What is a net zero home? A net zero home produces as much electricity as it consumes. So the net effect is net zero.
That is a very short but sweet and very valid answer. So, listeners, thank you very, very much for listening. Your support is greatly appreciated. Please join us next podcast when we'll be discussing Gentry Learning's new education platform. We've got new courses that are rolling out. You'll even be able to take a sample segment of the course, and that's all coming to you really, really shortly. So it's been a long time in the making, but I think you'll really enjoy it. And if you have little to no real estate investment experience, this is a must participate in. The courses are extremely affordable, and you can find out all about them on the next podcast. Thank you very much again, Alex.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, folks. So if you have any questions, either for Fred or for any of our guests, you can reach us through info@gentryres.com, info@gentryres.com. And of course, if there are no problems,
there are no opportunities. Till next time, listeners.
Thanks for joining Freddie on another edition of The Property Wizard. Got a question? Ready to invest? Email info@gentryres.com. And if you'd like to find out more about the courses offered through Gentry Learning, visit gentryres.com. Until next time, remember, If there are no problems, there are no opportunities.